8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. The guests this week are Max Cavalera of Soulfly, new album Totem out on Friday, August the 4th, and we have Opus from Dead by Wednesday. They are out on tour now, and their album Capital Conspiracy is also out now. And my one and only partner in crime, Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing today?
Awesome, man. How's it going?
I'm doing well, man. The weather is hot.
It is fucking steamy. That is for sure, man. It's funny. You mentioned Opus, and you know, he's on tour with Generation Kill with Rob Dukes. And before we started, you couldn't stop yawning. So if you want to see something funny that involves yawning, I actually interviewed Dukes a couple weeks ago for this tour, and the whole time he was fucking yawning. The whole interview is like, we're on a tour with, you know, he did a comment. Finally, I asked him in the interview, and I left it in. I was like, what's up with you? Why are you so tired? And apparently he was so tired, and it plays into what you just said, because he's living in Arizona and it's so hot out there. Mm-hmm. He's staying awake, working his job at night.
Right.
And sleeping all day, so he doesn't have to deal with the 120 degree heat or whatever. So yeah, it's just funny because, I mean, two or three different answers, he's just yawning his ass. I'm finally just like, hey, man, am I keeping you awake? You know, I just kind of busted his balls a little bit. But fun stuff. I love that guy. And that's a great tour, man. Dead by Wednesday and Generation Kill. That's solid, man.
Reminds me a few months ago, I was interviewing somebody, and it's just the way that they looked. Mm-hmm. But every time I started to ask a question, it looked like the person was rolling their eyes. So I literally stopped the interview, and I'm like, do you hate these questions? You know, like, you look like you keep rolling your eyes. He's like, no, they're great questions. I'm just having to think about them. And
he's like,
I was just like, that's the first time I think I've ever gotten like confrontational with the interview subject.
Oh, I've done that a time or two.
But the guest this week, Max Cavalera, Soulfly, new album Totem, man. You and I have both talked about this album in the past, and just it's if you like Soulfly, if you like early classic, just meat and potatoes Soulfly, you're gonna love this album.
I'm surprised you interviewed Max Cavalera. It's not like you're a fan or anything.
Oh, I was rendering the video of the interview last night, and at the end of it, I'm like, you know, I say like, you know, thanks for coming on the show, and he's like. No problem to me, you know, like says it. And I'm just like, oh my God, he said my name.
Max Cavalera knows my name.
He knows to call me to me, you know.
20 so years fun. Ago, that would have been like, that would have been it. You'd have been like, yep, I'm done.
Right. I might be done after this interview.
Right.
It was funny when I sat down, because we did this interview a few weeks ago. A lot of people have already seen a little clip of it with the talking about the Pantera reunion. But I was like, I interview him so much now. I'm like, what is this for again? Like, is this for a tour? Is this for a single? Is this for a side project? No, this is for Soulfly.
Yeah. Finally, we got something to talk about with Soulfly, you know, cause I mean, he's been so busy. So he probably, of all the metal musicians, he is probably the one that the minute that that one state somewhere, anywhere said you could take the mask off, he was like, okay, I'm on tour. You know, I mean, he's been out there since the mandates kind of went away. He's been firing on all cylinders. And boy, Totem is a great record, though. God damn it, is that good.
Yeah, that was one of the first shows I went back to after post-COVID, you know. I went to a couple of festivals, but this is like, you know, small club show. And I was just like, yeah, the whole time you feel like just COVID's just on you.
Don't let the it get on me, man.
It's all over me.
Well, you know me with Soulfly, brother. I'm all about the Soulfly, oh, baby. Look at that. Always got that right handy. Because, man, what a gift from the Soulfly folks.
that is nice. You know, it's funny. We always ask for the reviews, iTunes reviews and whatnot. And I had an alert come through. And I was like, wait a minute, this is an older review, but I think it's an updated review. Okay. So longtime listener of the show, purchaser of many a Talk To Me t-shirt, Jay Shablewski. He looks like he updated his iTunes review. So it's a 5-star review. It says, great guy. Josh gets it done. Awesome guests. And the killer music. Aiken's all right, too. Wow. And it looks like a new added thing here at the bottom. Bob's Burgers rules.
All right. See, stop it. That's why I'm just all right, because I didn't like your damn Bob's Burgers movie.
Well, it looks like he loves Bob's Burgers so much that he edited his previous iTunes review.
Probably said Chris is a dick for not liking Bob's Burgers. But other than that, the show rules.
Right. If you're listening to this on podcast, from now on, all of these intros and outros are going to be on the Knotfest YouTube. So if you want to come look at mine and Chris's beautiful faces, head over to the Knotfest YouTube. Make sure to subscribe and smash that notification bell and
leave
all the
comment,
other podcasts.
Leave a like, leave a comment, leave a like, 5-star review.
You got to do it, man. You got to do it.
I know.
You know, it's, I don't know if I've talked about this. I think when I joined Knotfest YouTube, it was about, I think it's right around 70,000 subscribers, and they just passed 107,000 subscribers. So
nice.
Appreciate everyone that's subscribed to the YouTube for the Talk To Me podcast and all of the other good stuff.
It's probably going to go to 500,000 now that we're going to be in front.
All of our beautiful faces.
That's
on
the right.
Thing. You and I were just guests on the Decibel Geek podcast talking. Yeah. They have a great show where they do a best and worst of. And so we would go album by album. Mm-hmm. We did best and worst of Pantera. So each album we would pick our favorite song and our least favorite song, because there's really no bad Pantera.
Right.
So, but I actually listened to that episode. I typically don't listen to things that I'm on, but I listened to it today, and you know, Senzak did a great job with the edit. And it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a great time doing it. And, you know, it's kind of the hallmark of a great show is when you look up and you're like, oh, wow, we've already been doing this an hour and a half or whatever it was. And that one went really fast. I mean, we were done with the things. I was like, man, what are they going to do with this? It's like 15 minutes long. And I looked up. I was like, oh, I guess we've been sitting here a while.
Right.
You know, yeah, it was good. That was a lot of fun. And it really was hard finding a worst on most of those records. That was really difficult.
Right. Yeah. There's the one thing I liked that I said was the, you know, every song that you start to get into and you're like, maybe this is my least favorite. Then you hit a chorus, man. And those guys at Pantera, man, they could write a chorus.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing we were universal on was that we all hated Good Friends and a Bottle of Pills. Right. I think we all hated that one, but all the rest was good. So yeah, people should definitely go check that out over, was it decibelgeek.com? Right.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah, over on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
That's right.
And that'll bring us right into the news. I wanted to bring up Phil Anselmo. This is actually an older interview from earlier in the year in February. Okay. Obviously, people are going back and mining all of the wonderful Pantera things from over the years. And Phil Anselmo says, I know Dimebag and Vinnie Paul would want the legacy and the name of Pantera to go on and on. So this past February, at least 2 months after he first approached Charlie Benante about taking part in the new Pantera tour, Philip Anselmo spoke to The Pit about what he thought about the band's late guitarist Dimebag Daryl Abbott and drummer Vinnie Paul Abbott would say about Pantera's legacy. So basically he just says he knows that Dime and Vince would want the legacy of Pantera to go on and on.
I know Dime would. I'm not convinced Vince would have wanted to do this. I'm just not convinced of it, but whatever. Vince is not here to stop it. So it's happening. So I'm going into it straight positive. I don't care what it's called. I don't care. You know, I'm going.
I'll be there.
Pantera, tribute to Pantera, whatever we're calling it. I'm going. So that's good enough for me.
Well, there's been some statements that even Zach said that, you know, over the years, the fellas have been talking about doing it and asking him over the years. And then there was a quote by Chris Adler, former Lamb of God drummer, about him telling Vinny not to do it. Like mm-hmm. Vinny was asking, you know, Chris, what he thought about it. So I think Vinny's, you know, dipped his toes into doing it over the years. And the thing with Vinny is Vinny didn't hate Pantera. He hated Phil because of what happened to Dime. So it's not like he wouldn't be about it if Dimebag was still here and all that stuff. I think Vinny was just mad with Phil, but you know, we all get over things over the years.
Yeah. I don't know. I can just tell you from sitting across from that guy, you know,
yeah.
When you sitting there looking him in the eye and you get that big Texas hate stare, it did not feel like, well, maybe he'll get over this with a little time. It really felt like, well, I better not ask that again or I'm going to get punched in the mouth. You know, it's
still all fresh though. When you interviewed him,
it was 2004. So
yeah. And I actually have a quote from Rita Haney when she was on the Talk to Me podcast in, I think, 2017. She said that even back then, when around, you know, obviously before Dime's death, he was already trying to talk to Rex about, you know, getting the band back together. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, had he not, you know, been taken from us, I think he would have initiated a, you know, reforming of the band. Because, I mean, even, you know, I just know from being around Pantera towards the end there, I mean, Phil was on his own bus the entire time anyway. So, I mean, there was already disconnect. But I think that Vinny is such a big music fan, and he just understands legacy and everything else, that he would have, especially if Dimebag wanted to do it, if Dimebag went to Vince and said, hey, let's get the band back together, you know, there's no way Vinny's telling him no.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I just wonder if it would have been the same. I guess that's really, I kind of agree with you. If Dime said, yeah, I want to do this, they would have done it. I mean, because Dime, especially in today's world, Dime would have been on social media. Right. Dime would have literally said, y'all know I want to do it. You just got to convince Vince. You know that we'd have seen that tweet, you know, if Dime was on social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it would have happened. I just don't think it would have been super comfortable. Like it wouldn't have been the brotherhood that we got to experience for so many years with those guys.
Oh yeah. Even when I saw Damage Plan, they ended the show with Walk and A New Level. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, even then, you know, Dimebag from the stage is like, it's not us that doesn't want to be playing these songs for you guys or something like that. And then they went into Walk and A New Level. I still think it's funny that Charlie and Zach are the only ones talking about this. Like, Philip hasn't said anything. Rex hasn't said anything. You know, the Pantera social media accounts aren't saying anything. It's just really bizarre that no statement has even been made. Like, even a teaser or just like, you know, anything, just a date or just a, you know, something cryptic, you know, anything like that.
You got to think that it's management. It's McGee saying, don't say anything, and then we'll do the big, you know, like the Motley Crue big thing where they show up with, you know, tombstones or some shit, and they'll have a big blowout in LA.
Hopefully they don't have tombstones.
Well, I, you know what I mean. That's what Motley Crue did.
Yeah,
I would hope they don't go that route. I would hope they have four, you know, two drum sets and two guitars, and they're like, this is a tribute to our fallen brothers. We're going to keep the metal alive, you know, whatever the spin is going to be on it. But I have a feeling that they're waiting till everything's lined up, till they have all the tour dates, all the headlining festivals, everything. And to be honest, and I don't know this to be true, I have no knowledge of this at all. So take this with a grain of salt, depending on when you're listening to this. It would shock me none if we get an announcement either Sunday or Monday this week, because the Wacken Festival is this weekend, and that's a huge type of festival that I could see a reunited Pantera headlining, and they usually announce their headliner on the last day of Wacken.
Okay.
So it would not shock me at all if on Sunday we get this announcement. The first big announcement is that Pantera will be headlining Wacken on August whatever of 2023. You know, and that's 100,000 people. So I would imagine that would be a big enough. That's a big enough announcement to kick it up.
I do think I do find it funny that that Charlie and Zach are talking about this. I mean, I, even if Pantera management's going to them being like, hey, you know, don't talk, don't say too much about it, or, you know, just say, hey, you know, no comment as of right now. Or, you know, even some of the interviews they're doing, obviously they're going on Eddie Trunk and they're going on these places. Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I get those things. Hey, don't ask about this, or hey, don't ask about that. And, you know, we're obviously gonna you know, fulfill that and not say anything. Sure. So it's kind of crazy that, that they're going on Eddie Trunk and saying, you know, talking about this stuff when, like I said, no one else in the camp is really saying anything.
Yeah, well, they might not be under the same management either.
True. You know,
there's that. They may not be obligated to anything with Doc McGee.
Yeah. And I think Doc McGee and those guys would reach out to Charlie and Zach and say, hey, we know you guys are going on tour together. Can you not talk about the upcoming tour or blah, 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 you know?
How are they going to do that? Every interview is going to ask them.
Yeah.
Every single interview that they do on this Anthrax, and how convenient is that? Anthrax and BLS touring together, so that every interview that they do is going to lead up to the Pantera deal. So
last thing on this, I was watching some live Pantera from back in the day, and there's an old I forget what song they're playing, but at the end of it, Zach comes out. He actually comes out with a dog, which is bizarre, but it's like an Ozfest. Comes out and it's. There's a shot of Dimebag putting Dime's guitar on Zach.
Nice.
And I'm like, man, that's awfully symbolic these days.
Sure. That'll probably be in the screen, right. On the screen at the shows, you would think.
Yeah. It's going to be fun, though, man. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Me too. Can't wait.
I'm not. I will say that there this rumor of Suicidal Tendencies and King's X opening, I'm just like, nah, that's not big enough for me.
That's not good. I like Suicidal.
Yeah.
Not enough to see them, you know, not enough to see them open for Pantera.
Right.
Love the guys in King's X. I want to state that over and over, because I know that when I just my statement in a second is going to make all the King's X people hate me.
Right.
But I love those guys. All three of them. I've interviewed two of the three in the last 6 months. I interviewed Ty and I interviewed Doug within the last 6 months. So I am a fan of them as guys, but King's X blows. They're just not good. They're certainly not good opening music for Pantera.
Yeah.
They're good for Motley Crue.
If you give me this bill, like I need not Suicidal Tendencies that I can go to any festival anytime and see. I mean, they've been great. I've seen them a ton over the last few years. Fantastic band.
Yeah.
But and then King's X, I've just never done anything for me. I know they're one of those bands where you got to kind of, you know, maybe one day you see them live and you get into them, or you know, like one day it clicks or something like that, but it just never clicked for me.
Dude, the bottom line is they're Beatles influenced, and that doesn't jive with Pantera at all.
Right.
And again, I'm not trying to shit on their music, although I don't like it. You know, I mean, it's just not, it's not a good match. You honestly need BLS or Anthrax or some very like band to those two bands.
Right.
Like Overkill or Death Angel or Testament or something like that. Not King's X.
That brings us to Kerry King's new band is quote unquote crushing and on par with Slayer.
Oh, sure it is. I'm sure it is. You know, I saw this story, and I'm guessing that you will listen to this when it comes out. You know, the minute you hear it, you see that's out there, you'll take a look, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear any hype about this thing, and stop comparing it to Slayer, and stop using your radio buds to go and, you know, you went on a buds radio show and then they said you did your music sounds good. Really? What are they going to say? Yeah. My buddy Kerry King came by and his music blew.
Right.
You know, now I will tell you, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I've told it before, but in 2001,
okay.
I was hosting the metal show on WMMS, and I used to get hammered before the show. There was a bar right downstairs from the station, and we used to show up, like me and my friend Pat, we used to show up like 2 hours before and just get hammered. Then I'd go up drunk and do the metal show. And one day we were in the bar, and who's sitting there but Kerry King? And it was like, holy shit, wow, Kerry King. And I went right up to him and asked him if he wanted to come upstairs and do the metal show with us. And he was like, yeah, that'd be great. And then he goes, well, in the car, I've got a copy of a new song. You know, do you want me to come up and I'll play it on the air for you? And this was before anything was out there with it. It was easily 6 months before God Hates Us All came out.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah. So we brought him up to the studio, and he gives us the CD to play. And we go live, and my radio partner, Matt, he goes, oh, I can't believe that you found this guy. You know, he's praising me. And then Kerry King is like, I'm not Kerry King. Why are you trying to convince everybody that I'm Kerry King? and he held with this for a long time until it got uncomfortable. And then finally he says something like, well, I could just keep going with this, but you've got that CD over there and that'll kind of convince people that it is. And then we played the song, and the song was Bloodline from God Hates Us All. And that's actually out there if you want to. That's one I could actually, I know a lot of people are like, bullshit, you and your dumb stories. That one is actually, if you look up on Spotify, the best of music's bottom line, you could actually hear that appearance with Kerry King on Spotify. So it is out there if you want to hear that. It's fun.
Nice. Yeah, so why was he there? Why was he at the bar?
He was hanging out with the guys from Nile.
Okay.
Like I think he was banging some girl here in Cleveland.
Okay.
And so he came in to hook up with the girl or something. I don't know that. Let me just state that because I have no idea what his marital status or any of that is. But I think he might have been hooking up with some chick. And I know he was going to the Nile show that night. And so he was there, and what's his name? Carl Sanders was there. Yeah. And
Carl, you stay down here.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know who Carl Sanders was. I'm not going to lie. I didn't even invite him up. I just invited Kerry up. but yeah, he was just hanging out with Niall.
Nice. Yeah. Seeing if I could see a quick, didn't really say his marital status.
Yeah.
No. All right. Well,
allegedly was hooking up. I don't know that to be true. I'm stating that as truth. I don't know that to be true. I don't really know why he was there, but I think it was a girlfriend thing.
Nice. Couple things with Ripper Owens there in Cleveland. We'll transition to some more Clevelanders. Ripper Owens has put out a single with, good old Jamie Josta, man. How are you liking this new single that he's put out?
I want to love it because it's Ripper, who is a really close friend. I really want to love it, and I am a huge, huge, huge fan and supporter of Ripper. First single didn't grab me. It sounds like kind of like everything else that Tim does. I mean, it's okay. It's, you know, like I said to you before, I loved what Josta did with Dee Snider.
Yes.
He really revitalized Dee, and those two records that he did with Dee are great because they're in somewhat of a different direction. Mm-hmm. That first tune with Ripper, that Embattled tune, sounds kind of like what Ripper does. So, you know, I mean, obviously that's one song out of probably 12 that they're going to do, but
right.
You know, and I don't know why what the rush is to put it out. They just announced that they were doing something. What is it? A Kickstarter or something that they're doing to raise money to produce it or something?
Yeah. I mean, most of the Josta, like, what do you call it? The, things that Joss produces that are unsigned. Mm-hmm. Basically with his solo stuff, with And Josta for All, which is what Joss is putting out. The mm-hmm. Ripper thing, I think they might have even done it with the D stuff, but you can there's just different little packages. Okay. And I'm looking at it now. For $50 you can get for $10 you can get on the thanks list. $50 you get on the special thanks list.
Whoa.
$200 you get executive producer list. And so some other stuff with that too. 8x10 signed by Ripper guitar pick, early preview of the new album, and your name on the on the jacket, which I think is the coolest part.
Yeah.
$10, I might do that.
Yeah, for $10. I mean, I think I had my name on the Beyond Fear record. I think I was in on that one. And I didn't pay $10, damn it.
But other Ripper news. This is a little bit older, but I brought it up with Ripper. But Ripper says he never got a call from Judas Priest about the upcoming Rock Hall induction.
Yeah, that's pretty weak.
I mean, obviously it's a headline on Blabbermouth, so it's going to be a little bit probably overblown. I mean, it could mm-hmm. easily have just been a statement of, hey, did they call you about the, going into the Rock Hall? And he'd be like, no. And then there's your headline. But I mean, if Judas Priest is going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't see Ripper going in with them. You know, I it's more of a thank you for your service, but I don't expect them to call him.
I don't know. He did a long time with them. He did 10 years.
Did he really?
I think it was, yeah, because he did 8 or something.
Right.
As he did, Halford came back in what, 2000 something?
Well, his quote is, it's a shame that the Hall of Fame can't bring in members that were in the band for almost 10 years, had a Grammy nomination, 2 studio records, 2 live records, a DVD. It's a shame they can't do it.
Yeah. To me, the Grammy nomination is the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like he just held it down, and I mean, what are they doing with Faulkner? Is Faulkner going to be in or not?
I don't know. I don't see who in Judas Priest is getting inducted.
Yeah. I mean, Dave Holland, is he going to get in?
I mean, that's the thing with them, man. They've got so many former members.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Holland went to jail for what, raping a kid or something. I mean, that's what it was,
right?
That's not just me being silly. That's literally what it was like, sexual assault of a kid. So is he going in? I mean, he played on all those. He played on British Steel and all the big ones of that era.
Let's see. The Hall will formally induct current members Rob Halford, Ian Hill, Glenn Tipton, Scott Travis, plus former guitarist KK Downing, drummer Les Binks, and late drummer Dave Holland.
See, and to me, if they're taking Les Binks in there, they should be taking Ripper in there. 4 records and a Grammy nomination? Come on.
Right.
I hate the Rock Hall. I wish somebody would just pull one of them pillars out and dump it into the lake. Place sucks. It's so bullshit. Have you ever seen any organization that every time they do their job, it comes with controversy, like the Rock Hall? Every time.
Yeah.
I mean, the Football Hall of Fame. There might be somebody that's like, oh, well, maybe this guy should have been in too or whatever, but right. It's never blatant. Every single year, there's a Judas Priest, a blatant misstep, or a blatant, what was it, 2 years ago with Steve Miller Band, where they wouldn't pay for any of his right. band to actually be there, and he blew a gasket on the stage about that his guys were charged $10,000 to sit at a table while they were nominated.
Right.
What is wrong with this stupid place? Yeah, that place is and you haven't been there. I've been there. It is a dump. It really is just, you've been to better rock halls or rock, what do you call it?
Hard Rock Cafes.
Hard Rocks. Yeah. You see more good merch at a Hard Rock. You just do, unless you want to see, David Ruffin's shirt and the napkin that James Hetfield wrote Enter Sandman on. you know, that's about it. Michael Jackson's glove. It's like, whoopee.
Yeah, you can see all that stuff at, you know, basically any hard rock that you go into, you're going to find at least a few things you like.
Yeah, the only cool thing, and I'll give the Rock Hall the tiniest bit of credit. I don't know if it's still there, but when I went through, it was there. The only cool thing was the ZZ Top car.
Yeah.
Seeing the ZZ Top car, you know, from 6 inches away was pretty fucking sweet. But everything else in that place, I just walked around and was like, wow. There's the tie that George Harrison wore at Met Stadium. Fantastic. You know, I was like, a bunch of garbage.
Too funny. Well, before we get into the interviews this week, man, do you have any recommendations for the week?
I do. And I'm going to go to the mighty world of YouTube this week. No TV show, no music show, or no musical albums. But I found, and you'll love this, and you may have already watched these, there's a guy out there, his username or his channel name is Mike Holderbeast. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy or not, but he shot the Down live at NOLA at the House of Blues.
Okay.
And that is all out there. It is mint video, soundboard quality, mixed, perfect audio of a bunch of the great Down stuff from live in New Orleans. Oh my God, is it good, man? And if you're looking for a specific video to watch, just look up the Lifer Pillars of Eternity video. Mm-hmm. It is mint. I'm looking at it right now. It's from 8 years ago. Yeah. It has almost 1 million views and it is awesome. So look this guy up, Mike Holderbeast, and you will get some seriously good Down video. So that would be my recommendation for the week.
Yeah, man, this guy, like every video of his is like a Super Joint or Philip H. Anselmo or Crowbar. Yeah, it looks awesome. And definitely have to check this out.
I'll wait till you hear how good the quality is. I mean, this is the quality of this is better than the Down, you know, Diary of a Mad Band or whatever that thing was called. It's way better than that. So check it out, man. It's really good.
Well, my recommendation this week is actually, I believe, a recommendation of yours from last week. And it's the documentary, The Most Hated Man on the Internet. Oh man.
Yeah, that guy was a real piece of shit, wasn't he?
Yeah, we were sitting there like the other day and just nothing to watch. And the wife fell asleep on the couch and I hit play on this thing. And my goodness, man, I'm over here having to Google butthole girl and everything else, trying to see what's going on with these people, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Who was worse, him or the people that knew what he was about and kept going, like butthole girl that knew he was a piece of shit, but just wouldn't cut him out of her life. Just kept letting him in. Okay, well, let's do a video call and let's what? He already embarrassed you. Stop it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people just want to be famous. And then, you know, even she said back then, she realized that, you know, if she wanted to be a webcam girl, you know, she could drive traffic from what was the website that he ran?
Is anyone up?
Yeah. And just every character in there, man. And his girlfriend, you know, she was just a piece of work too. And this everything about that documentary is just screams just insanity.
How did he only get 30 months?
Yeah.
How did that happen that he only got 2 years of time? That was the part that amazed me. I mean, he was literally threatening people's lives and stuff and he only got 2 years.
Well, the crazy part about it was the hacking. Like, I mean, if that website was legit, just revenge, you know, revenge photos, revenge porn, all that stuff. Like if that was the website itself, I don't really think they could have done much about it. But the fact that they were in there just blatantly hacking people, which, you know, you'll get those random texts every once in a while or a message like, hey, man, I'm locked out of my Facebook. You know, can you help me? Like those messages still happen. But I mean, I'm assuming when all of this stuff started coming down, I mean, that was fairly new.
Sure.
People weren't privy to that. But it was also crazy just how many people have those photos just in their Gmail account.
Yeah, or in their documents folder on their computer. Here, take it. You know, if you ever want to watch something that's really fun, it's fun in the most crazy way. I don't know the YouTube guy's name, but if you just look up beating scammers, okay. There's this guy, and what he does is he pretends he's an old lady when the scammers okay. call him, and then he gets them to connect to his computer to try and steal his money. Yeah. And then he goes and deletes everything on their computer so that their computers crash. It's the best channel. And I mean, there's hundreds of videos of this guy. And then the scammer's like, please give me my files back. Cause he does the same thing. He goes right in and he deletes all their family photos and all their, you know, these guys are using their home computers.
Right.
They're, you know, and he just goes in and hacks the hackers and steals all their pictures and deletes all their, you know, the accounts of people that they've ripped off and stuff. So it's cool. It's I love seeing hackers get theirs. So I liked seeing on some level that the Is Anyone Up guy got his, even though I freely admitted I was a very active user of his website back in the day. I didn't know all the hacking was going on, but I was definitely a frequent user of his website. And but yeah, I liked seeing that he at least they took him down. Thank God for that.
Yeah, it's a crazy, just that whole period of time, man, just mm-hmm. everything about him, man. So yeah, if you guys want to check out a fun documentary on Netflix, The Most Hated Man on the Internet.
Good stuff.
All right, for those of you that are VIPs, stick around for the interviews with Max Cavalera and Opus from Dead by Wednesday.
I'm leaving next week to Mexico. We go to Mexico and South America in general, and pretty excited for that. I haven't been down there in a while, and finally cleared up with the pandemics. Mm-hmm. Actually pretty good there, and hopefully get around to, I think Soulfly is going to Japan in August. I'm super excited for that. I haven't been there since 2008.
Oh, wow.
And then maybe we hit Europe as well in October, November. And I think we have a hopefully US tour like for January.
Nice.
For Totem that's coming out, you know. So hopefully that still is still the plan. But yeah, it's all good, man. Keeps it busy, exciting. I'm super pumped for the record. Pretty excited for this one. It's like you think that you're not going to be that excited because it's your 12th record, but I am, you know.
Right.
It's just how it is.
Yeah, I went on to Spotify a minute ago just to kind of listen to some old Soulfly, and I was like scrolling till I get to the old stuff. I was like, man, it's so much material put out.
Right, it's gonna be hard even to make a set list. Like, there's so much shit to play. That's why I was doing like the Max tracks.
Yeah,
that was fun because it was like every week I just picked. Actually, I'm gonna bring that back at some point. After probably I'm done with some of those tours. But yeah, every week I prepare for a different song, and I just look at I tried to make a list of the songs, and it was like pages and pages. And I mean, including Nailbomb and Sepultura and all that, you know, it's like thousands of songs, man. Right. Too many fucking songs.
Right. Right. Well, we started somewhere in there. I'll find a good spot. But to people listening, the only Max Cavalera on the show, new album Totem out August 5th, man. A few things I wanted to get to on the album itself. Well, let's just start with the cover, man. What a cool cover. What is the word, like, the totem mean to you? You know, I know you're very, you know, spiritual and into the you know, the roots of everything. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So I didn't have a title when I entered the studio. for a long time, I was flirting with the idea of spirit animal and spiritual nature and all that. So there's like superstition. It was like about the superstition mm-hmm. mountains and stuff. But kind of halfway through, I came across, just browsing in the internet, came across the word totem. And I clicked to see the meaning, and I was really intrigued. It was a cool meaning. It was like, you know, for Native Americans, it's a symbol of power. It's a connection to their ancestors, and it's kind of like what kind of guides them through life. And I was like, whoa, this is fucking cool.
Right.
Then in my brain, I was like, man, totem, that's metal, right? Our shirts. Those are our totems that we wear on our shirts and the backdrop mm-hmm. of the band. Those are the totems. So for me, like totem and metal was like, it's all one thing. But the original name was actually, it was more black metal. I was going to call it Totem Obscurum.
Nice.
It had a nice ring to it, you know.
It does, like, yeah.
But at the end, I was kind of like, was convinced. Soulfly is kind of more about one title, records instead of two. So I kind of follow the normal way of the Soulfly way. So I just went back to Totem. But I always thought it was kind of cool. I should have named the song Totem Obscurum. Now that I think about it, I kind of fucked up on that. Oh, well, it's always something you look at. It's like, I could have done it differently. You know, actually, it's never exactly, you can never hit everything the way you really want it. But yeah, I love the cover, man.
Oh, yeah, great cover.
Buscema is a great artist. And it's an unknown guy. Like, he doesn't really do any other album covers. We kind of found him out of nowhere. Me and the guys at Nuclear Blast, Oscar was helping me a lot with the artwork. And I found this guy, and he made the sketch, and it was fucking killer. And then when he made the real thing in color, I was like, yes, killer. I love it. He's like, I totally love the cover. And Zion even helped a little bit. It's like, put some thunder in the forest, in the black forest. And so we added some little thunder on top of it. And I heard some people referring to as the animals in the totem as phases of my career.
Oh, nice.
The gold, like the black metal era. The warthog is more like death thrash.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the ego is like Soulfly, you know. So it was not done with that intention, but it's kind of cool that some people, like, you know, they use their imagination. That's what's cool about metal. Like, people just use their imagination, man, and comes up with all kinds of theories and ideas about stuff that sometimes is not what you meant, but they get something different out of it than you, and that's what's right. Cool, you know.
So this being the first album post Mark Rizzo, was there any trepidation kind of going into it? I mean, obviously he's been such a big part of the band for so long, you know, obviously going into the first album post him, you know, were you looking forward to trying something different, you know, all that good stuff?
All that, yeah. I mean, like everything like that happens is an opportunity to do something different, bring new blood, especially Soulfly. There's always been that kind of motto of changing people from time to time. And, mm-hmm. and also I kind of like I love that the record had a little bit of struggle related. So those are some of my best records, the ones that are not easy sailing, you know, they got drama in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Totem is full of drama. Like the whole Rizzo thing was his own soap opera on his own, you know?
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's like, come on, man. And so I saw it as an opportunity to do a couple of things, and we took us the opportunity as much as we could. Like having Dino playing live, it was incredible. We're still, you know, jamming with him right now. And then I had on the record itself, I had the opportunity to work with the Eternal Champion guys, which I'm a big fan. And they kind of bring that kind of old school heavy metal vibe to the solos, Arthur and John Powers, and I love it. I was like totally on board with it. It's like sounded different, fresh and new and exciting, you know. Kind of like the stuff with Rizzo. kind of was like, was always the same, you know, was a lot of the stuff was sounding a lot the same, and this is like new and different and exciting. And I won't lie, felt fucking great when I had like was working on the song. I was hear the solos coming in, and it was like different and exciting. Yeah, fuck yeah. I'm super proud of what we did. And there's even a song, Spirit Animal, has Chris from Power Trip did a solo. So yeah, we just did, you know, whatever we could for the record to came out, but it was done in a different way because of the pandemic.
Right.
So it was like, I worked with Zion for a long time, just me and him. Then Arthur came in. There was just the three of us, which is really cool. It's something cool happens like that. It just becomes like this, like you're less in numbers, but more in ideas. There's more ideas flowing, more chance taken in the studio. And then we send all the stuff to Mike in Florida. He put the bass on it. Mm-hmm. He's really good with that. So it was no stress. Like, yeah, you just do your shit in Florida. It's all good. He's got a whole set up there anyway. And yeah, so there's a bit of a struggle because of the whole Rizzo thing. And that's kind of work in the favor of the record, I think. Because you don't want to fuck with me, man. You know, you don't. You fuck with me. Yeah, there's payback. Like, I just kind of go on that fucking warrior mode and get angry, pissed off, and good shit comes out of it, musically talking, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. So the record has had that little bit of anger, a little bit of fire, you know? And, yeah, so, but I was super proud of what Arthur, especially me and Arthur, we really locked in on this record. And I love his production. He's involving so many great stuff, from bigger stuff like Power Trip, Cold Orange, to super underground stuff like Black Curse, mm-hmm. Devil Master. You know, the guy is always busy, always doing stuff. And he's very knowledgeable of the underground and metal. So it was just fun making a record with him. It was just incredible.
Yeah, I think when I spoke to you last, I told you, you know, we went to see the Soulfly with Dino playing guitar, and it really took Soulfly back to the meat and potatoes of it, just very heavy, just the raw energy. And the one thing that kind of carries over, I think, into Totem is it kind of just, you know, Mark, a very incredible guitar player, you know, add a lot of flair and things like that. But this brings you back to just meat and potatoes, Max Cavalera, Soulfly, you know, in your face type stuff.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted that and needed that, actually. You know, I think Totem, in a weird way, made me fall in love again with really elaborate short songs. Mm-hmm. Stuff that you have 2 minutes, 2 minutes and a half. So there's not a whole lot of time, but you can cramp a lot of stuff in it to make this thing super exciting. So I think that, to me, that's how Scarring the Vial came out. That's how Superstition came out. It has that old school vibe, because those old school records all had that Schizophrenia, Entombed, mm-hmm. you know, Morbid Angel, you know, Carcass, all that had, you know, like Draining Blood, perfect example. 2 minute songs. Right. Amazing. You don't never get tired of hearing that, man. So I was like obsessed with this idea. So side A of Totem is a fucking banger. I cannot wait to play it live. I'm going to play the whole side A first and then going into other classics and other stuff. But the first six songs on the record are just like one after the other, like MMA fighting, you know, it's like Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
Demolishing the octagon. And I love it. and it's not easy to do. It's like takes a lot of thought process to get it right. So like they're short songs, but there's a lot to do with that inside of it. There's a lot of different stuff that goes into making that. And then side B was more experimental. You know, I got Let Soulfly kind of run wild. Gothic instrumentals and 10-minute songs. It's like it's like night and day, like the record. Like
there you go.
Side B or night and day. But you're totally right on that. The meat and potatoes, the Max Cavalera, the people mm-hmm. love it. It's all in Totem. Like they wanted that raw Max, they got it. That's that's what is all this record is all about.
You brought up working with Zion there, and obviously, you know, my kid, my oldest son is, you know, 16. I couldn't imagine being in a band with him and just, you know, trying to explain to him like how to play and things like that. So like the father sonness of it. I mean, does he know the entire catalog where he can go back and be like, Dad, that time you did on, you know, Beneath the Remains, let's try something like that here? Or is he, you know, kind of just more modern in his musical takes? Or where is Zion at with the writing process?
Yeah, he's not a big fan of cover songs. I try to talk him to it to get jamming. Mm-hmm. He prefers to just jam new stuff, and that's cool. That's works great because we need new stuff all the time, you know. But the one thing that he kind of always asked me was like how I wrote those early songs. You know, he's always we had in a car. We go to the jam pad 3 times a week and we play tunes in the car. And I play old stuff. I play Schizophrenia and Morbid Visions. And, you know, I let him play some stuff. He played more classic stuff, Sabbath, Deftones, Slipknot, you know. And so he was kind of hinting at me, asking me how I wrote those songs. And I say, well, better to me than explain to you in words, which is kind of hard for me to explain to you in words how I made those songs. Let's talk musically. Like, I'll grab my guitar, you sit on the drums, and we just let the instruments talk to each other. And they did. It just went after, man. So it's like, all right, so a song like Arise, it's a riff. So we start like Superstition, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of riff that goes into make a song like that. So just keep playing. You see? So we keep adding all these parts, all these riffs collection, you know, and it was cool, man. It was like just fun, old school way of writing. Like, actually very similar to how I wrote a lot of early stuff with my brother. Like, a lot of times in the Sepultura days, I would come in earlier in the jam room we had at the bass player's house, and nobody was there, it was just me and Igor, and we just go at it. Mm-hmm. And create a lot of stuff, just the two of us, the rest of the band coming later and add stuff to it. But so it's similar to that. So it's good. There's something about the blood connection, the family blood that works. That's like, it's different playing with Zion and Igor than it is with anybody else. That I really like that. I think like it, the more I play with Zion, the more I understand where he's coming from, because he's very unorthodox, different kind of drummer. He's all about and the energy. It's like a wild beast. He's actually like the studio guy, like nicknamed him the Keith Moon of metal, you know, because it's all like fucking, you know, very visual, very cool to watch.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, especially like the ending of song when he goes crazy, like super fast. And that was one of the things that I loved that he did. And I actually put that on the song Totem. I put a whole drum solo in the middle of the song. Because I told him, like, your drum solos are really cool. We have to put them on the record, man. Because they're really cool. They're really exciting, you know. And I think, like, he's grown a lot from when he first got him in 2012, I think. Every record he gets more sure of himself, more used to the idea of the songs and all that. And on this one, he just went nuts. It was killer to watch.
Oh yeah.
The drumming on the record, I think it was really, really great, really fantastic. And he also has this really kind of groove. There's like really goes good with Soulfly. When it hits the groove, you really feel it, you know? Because a lot of drummers that play fast, when it comes to groove, mm-hmm. they hit the bed. They can't do it.
Yeah.
It's like a lost cause. But not Zion. Zion's really on the pocket in the groove, like killer, heavy, super groovy, like toms, tribal and stuff. And then there's a lot of fast stuff because I, you know, just that's how the record kind of went on that old school vibe with Arthur and the way we were writing. It was just kind of went that way anyway. So, but yeah, it was a real also, he was really involved, which is cool. More involved than any of the other records that I'd done with him. Finally, this time, he was different. He was a different guy. He was like, he wanted to be involved. He wanted to be part of it. He wanted to be part of the process. And he actually, like, even contributed to stuff. Like, there was some ideas where he was talking to me about doing time signature changes and stuff. And I was like, whoa, where that came from, man? You know, it's like, I didn't expect that from you. And so, and then we did it, you know, like kind of like 4-4-5, 4-7 counts, stuff that I normally not even don't fuck with it normally.
So right.
I don't read music. It's all
right. Me neither.
Caveman, you know?
Right. Exactly.
we are cavemen, but he kind of brought out a little bit of the technical side of Max in some of the parts. It was cool doing stuff like that. There's a thing, on the song, the damage done. So it was a count, was a 4 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd done stuff like that, but it was totally accident. I didn't know I was doing it. And this time I was actually knew I was doing it. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, bam.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, bam. And yeah, so that's kind of cool to look at music a little bit like that. Like he made me look at stuff a little bit different like that. So it was a great effort, man. I think I really connected with him on this record, which is really cool.
I wanted to dive into the last time that you and I talked, it was to promote the Beneath the Remains Arise tour you did with Igor. Friend of mine that I grew up with, you know, friends in the 90s, you know, we were teenagers in the 90s. We watched those old Sepultura home videos from, what is that, the Brazil show from like 92 on the Arise tour VHS back in the day. He hit me up. He saw the show in Salt Lake City. And the next day I get like a paragraph text of like, if you want to relive our childhood, you have to go see this show. It was like he was just on and on about how amazing of a night that was to see you guys play those songs again.
Yeah, that was a trip. The whole tour was super exciting. Really, I mean, I knew those records were good, but I didn't know they were that exciting to play. And that reaction that we got,
mm-hmm.
the crowd was just mind fucking blowing. It was great. It was insane. Some people even compare it to like religious experience and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that was part of the text. Yeah, it's a very religious experience.
Which I don't understand how it works. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
I don't know because I'm the one playing. I don't know how it is to be in the audience and witness that. I just kind of know there's a lot of history on those tracks. There's a lot of, man, nostalgic feelings that brings a lot of us back to that era. You know, I was doing that through the whole tour. I was remembering old shit as I was playing live, looking at Igor and just remember us as kids and stuff. And but every night I felt like I was just like Mike Tyson after a boxing match. I was fucking exhausted, man. I was like, I was spent. Like I'm done. And that's good. That's great when you do that on tour. Like, and then the next day starts all over again. Yep. The night's coming. Like, the beast is arriving, and you go through the whole thing all over again. And by the end of the set, I'm like, okay, like done, you know. But yeah, it's a great feeling. You just give it all. You leave it all there, you know. And some of the shows are, it was, like real. They felt historic for some reason. The Maryland Death Fest
mm-hmm.
had a historic vibe to it. Like, I think people are going to remember the show 10 years from now. They're going to talk about this fucking show because it was magic, you know, like pure magic that I cannot explain. Oh, I don't even want to know what it made it like that. But just happy to be part of this and be able to do it the right way, the way we did it with the right guys. And just the crowd was hungry for it. They were ready for it. That's what those things are for anyway, you know, like we do it cause we love to play home. It's they're tributes, you know,
right.
And they're not, we're not making a new band. We're not playing anything new. We are totally paying tribute to those records because they meant a lot to a lot of people. They mean a lot to me. They should be played live. It's a waste if we don't play them live. It is a total fucking waste. And I really believe in my heart that we did it the right way. We gave them, we humbly played them the right way. You know, we did justice to them.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. You know, it was like, it wasn't sloppy and it wasn't half ass. It was fucking done right. You know, we took it seriously and we fucking did it. And I think that's why it was such an incredible tour. Like on the socials, a lot of people talking about it. I saw a little bit and people losing their shit. And yeah, it's cool when it's done right like that. It feels good, man. It feels good. And you know, we got more records in the store. We got Chaos and Morbid Vision, Schizophrenia. I'm excited for when we do Chaos. I think that's gonna be a big one. That was a big record.
Yeah, if I come to the Chaos AD show, I have to come out and you know, at least introduce you guys or something, because I mean that was a pivotal record for me, man. Like that when I got Chaos AD on cassette, like I think I wore the hell out of that one.
Chaos AD is one of those, feels like a life changing kind of record in many ways. You know, it was super like hard to make, but it was, I don't know, like we managed to do something quite difficult because we're coming from Arise and Beneath the Remains are super fast and brutal, and Chaos AD is still brutal and it's still fast, but the groove came in, man, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was just from what we were listening to around us, you know, a lot of Biohazard,
oh yeah,
Sick of It All and Clutch and Fudge Tunnel, Pantera, of course, all of that. And we ended up touring with most of those guys anyway. So it was a great time. This is a big, big record. I cannot wait to when we do that. That should be awesome.
Well, you said it in there and I was going to ask you about it, man. You know, Pantera has announced that, you know, Rex and Phil are going to do some touring as Pantera in 2023, man. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think just like if they're doing like we are doing, like as a tribute, totally cool, awesome, you know. You know, you kind of can say about similar things about our stuff because it's not all the four original guys.
Right.
But it's as close as you get to that, and it's done really well. I think, you know, and probably what they're going to do is the coolest thing would be for us to tour together. How fucking badass would that be?
Yeah.
I don't know who you got to talk to. I don't know. I'm just throwing that in the air.
Got to throw it in the ether, man. Yeah.
Let people gossip. But how badass would that be, man? It's fucking A. But yeah, I'm, you know, excited. I think a lot of those records are so good. They have so many fans and they should be heard, you know, and rest in peace, Vinny and Dime. But if it's done right with the heart, with the right heart on it, hell yeah, dude, I'm totally on board. I think it'll be great.
Yeah, I just hope that, you know, obviously seeing Pantera as a kid back in the 90s, you know, I want to see, you know, the logo on fire. I want to see the light show. I want to see, you know, lasers and everything. You know, I want to see the spectacle that was, you know,
right. Pantera. Like, yeah, like our thing was is a bit different because I think, you know, Sepultura was a bit different from Pantera. You know, we didn't have so much of those things. It was more really just about the songs and just the energy of playing them the right way, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like I said, like the way we did it is like as a total tribute to those records, you know, and I feel totally 100% good about it. I think it's a good thing when it to me, like a lot of young kids were not even born when Arise and Beneath came out and they got to see that. They were singing every word, and you know, this new generation, they embrace that stuff, you know, so this music doesn't get outdated. It doesn't get, you know, it's it's not like some stuff that within with time just kind of fades out. It's out of fashion, out of, right. You know, doesn't happen with this music. So I think all of those records are like that, you know, and of course, Pantera is the same vein with, you know, Far Beyond Driven, you know, Cowboys from Hell. Those are some great fucking records, man. Right. You know, people want to hear. I think it's cool. Should be fun.
Last question on that. I mean, this game has been played for years and years, but I mean, who would you like to see play guitar and drums on that?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I wasn't prepared for this one. Hey,
you throw it out there. You know, I did a podcast yesterday. We went way deep into this. I mean, obviously the easy one is Zach Wilde, you know, Zach. Yeah. And I think the rumor came out today that it might be Charlie Benante on drums. You know, give me a Chris Adler from Lamb of, you know, formerly Lamb of God on drums, yeah. You know, like Gene Hoagland. You know, I'd love to see somebody like that out there doing it.
I would go with Chris from Power Trip.
Mm-hmm.
Me, that would be my drum choice. And then on guitar, man, even Gary Holt would have been cool.
Yes.
You know, fucking he played with Slayer and Exodus, and it's part of the era, you know. Really, really, to me, that would be the two that I would think would fit in pretty cool.
Yeah, man. I'm here. No, yeah, I get it, man. The you know, the internet's obviously split one way or another, man, but if it's done well, it's done right. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, yes. Especially if we're together.
Yeah, as long as it's Pantera Soulfly, which I did see that tour. Is you guys Soulfly, Morbid Angel, Nothing Face, I think I saw
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, Chicago, we did that, and of course, Sepultura in Pantera and Biohazard, I think, mm-hmm. was like the first one.
Yeah, and the 94 show, something happened with you, and Sepultura had to cancel that date for my show.
Savior. Yeah, new savior. But, you know, like if we go out and play, like Chaos AD and they played the Pantera that together, that could be fucking amazing.
There you go. Oh man.
That's huge. But yeah, we'll see what happens, man. Like I'm also actually really happy in my pond.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to speak, like, those Arise Beneath Their Main shows we did, they were just perfect the way they were. Like, I don't really think, needs to be even bigger places. Like, to me, that really doesn't change much. I think it's more about why you make it happen in the venue that you are.
Right.
So it's like the LA show, the Belasco, it's a, you know, I don't know, 1,500 people, but all those 1,500 people were connected. It's incredible when it's like that. It doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes you have a big show and some of the people are connected and a lot of other people are just there, just, you know, whatever, just watching, you know, because there's nothing better to do that night or whatever, you know.
Right.
When it's connected, it's killer. That's when the real power comes in.
Do you have another interview right now, or do you have time for another question?
One more. Yeah, man, we can do one more question.
All right. Well, I just want to hit on John Tardy being on Total, man. John Tardy, one of my favorite voices of all time. Obviously with the, you know, obviously in your connection goes back to the Beneath the Remains of Rise time too. So how cool was it to get John Tardy on Totem?
Amazing. It was so cool. I mean, we wrote the song and I was singing and Arthur was like, man, you sound like John Tardy. Like when I was scouring the vials, and I was holding the vial and it was like, so he was like, instead of you imitating him, why don't we get the real guy, man? Fuck it. Let's, you know, get the real guy in the song. And you guys are bros anyway. You guys are brothers from the past. You know, he sang core backing vocals on Stronger Than Hate. So, yeah, I call him and he was super thrilled, super happy to be part of it. It's a kick-ass song. I love it. It's a Fuck You Cancer song. It was inspired by many people that we lost, especially LG Petrov from Entombed. That's what we died when I was in the studio making the record. And I couldn't be happier with this old school collaboration. You know, it's like an old school survivor like me. We survived grunge and hair metal. just that in itself, it's a miracle. It's so cool to, and I know he doesn't do a lot of collaborations outside Obituary. So that was another thing that made me really excited for it, you know?
Yeah. Some of those early Obituary grooves, like World Demise to me is always my favorite Obituary album just because of the grooves on it. Like that had some new metal vibes to it, pre new metal too, that they probably don't get enough credit for.
Exactly. It's killer. Some killer shit.
Awesome, Max. Well, Max, I'll let you get out of here, man. Total out August 5th, Nuclear Blast Records. And it's always a blast to talk to you. And hopefully we will talk soon.
Thank you, Tumi. Take care, man.
All right, man. Take care.
All right.
Man, my name is Christian Lawrence, but my nickname is Opus, and I got that. I didn't give it to myself, although I look like one of those guys that would. Right. It came very naturally at a young age. It actually started off as an insult by my former bandmates. They laughed at me when we were trying to name the band, and I came up with an Opus. And I guess apparently there was an Opus in the 70s that I was unaware of, and I just thought it was cool because it has a musical, you know, connotation to it. And I'm like, oh, how about this name? And they started laughing at me and they're pointing at me. And I was, you know, and I was a chubbier kid. And and there's a penguin also, a chubby penguin called Opus, is a character.
Oh, nice.
Bill. And they're like, you're Opus. And then so they started calling me Opus as an insult. And I embraced it kind of like the one name guy. And it just kind of helped me, like it took off and on the local scene because it was a one word. Everyone remembered it. When they met me, and then when I would do business, even at a young age, I would separate myself. I would call the promoters as Christian F. Lawrence, my name from Mind Snap Music, and then on stage when I show up, I'd be Opus. So nice. It kind of worked out in my favor. So ha ha on them for their insult. You know?
Too funny. It's funny is I had another name for when I booked my old bands. I was Lotus Jackson.
Right.
I don't know why, but it made me think about that. But to make the band look more professional,
the booking
agent's name was me, but it was I put Lotus Jackson down.
That's great. So, I mean, I booked my first show at age 13, literally myself, never looked back. I mean, I just I've just constantly been going, never nonstop, you know, my whole life. So, and that's going to all be in my book. I have an amazing autobiography coming out. Very soon, I got a great publisher and Doug Esper that worked with Chuck, from the former singer of Faith No More. Nice. He's a ghostwriter on the book, and he did an amazing job. And it goes through all my like roller coaster of a career from the 90s with Gargantua Soul being on the radio and TV and playing Woodstock 99 and almost that's my nickname, my Native American name, almost to you know, playing with David Ellison for 5 years. And and meeting all these cats, you know, playing with everyone from Chris Poland to John Bush to Daryl from DMC to, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, Frankie Bello, I played with Altitudes and Attitudes for a while, their side band with Frankie Bello and Ellison. So, you know, it's been a really wild roller coaster and a lot of ups and downs and a lot of trials and tribulations. So I felt like, you know, everyone thinks they have an interesting life. But besides that, you know, I met my father at age 30 for the first time. He left when I was 2. I showed up at his doorstep in Rome, Italy, because that's where I was born. And that's where he's from, still there. Mm-hmm. And so I showed up at age 30. That was an amazing experience. Some crazy background with my older brother that people don't realize. You know, he was one of the leaders of one of the biggest hammerhead skins in the 80s and spent a decade in federal prison. And, you know, and I have a multicultural family. We have Puerto Rican, Italian, Jewish. Now we have Black. I mean, every, you name it. And we, you know, we have in our family, and to have him, you know, kind of fall into that, those people at a young age and being brainwashed and stuff. And now he's, you know, now he's okay. And he's doing well, but you know, just a crazy life. So I put it all together and that's going to be coming out soon. I figured while we're talking about it, I'd throw it out there because it's going to be real soon. Michael Olago did the cover photo for it. Came out amazing. So yeah, it's really, really cool. But yeah, that's basically I wanted to describe.
Well, let's talk about something else that's very, very cool. And that's the latest album, Capital Conspiracy, and the single, man, Here Comes the Dead Man. What a fucking banger of a tune that is.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I mean, we wanted to, I really appreciate that. We wanted to come out swinging because, you know, over the course of the pandemic, obviously no one could do anything. We were all sitting around with our thumbs up our butts. And so we started like doing regular, like we do now, regular practice over Zoom every week, every Thursday, no matter what. We would get together over Zoom and we would like go over riffs and start writing. And we were just talking about, you know, what we're going to, the future and stuff like that. And sure enough, remotely, you know, they would share files and we would start writing all these songs with our new singer and Esteban. And basically it just came quick and it was something that we wanted to do. It was come out with an album that was basically pure aggression. Everyone was like legitimately pissed off about the world and what's going on around us and the pandemic and being stuck at home and, you know, not too much politically, but just more socially and humanitarian wise. I mean, our singer is a combat veteran and he had a lot of anger, legitimate anger inside of him that he lets out as a therapy on the microphone. And you could tell why when you listen to the album, it's not fake, you know, it's not contrived, it's real. So I have to keep up with that. And, you know, and I'm an older dude, I'm the drummer, you know, I have a pretty good life. So I have to like, they're really pushing me to be a better musician and more aggressive and faster. And so, you know, this album shows that, I think, and I'm really happy with how it came out because it just kind of puts a whole breath of fresh air with the band. I mean, the band's been around a long time. We've had a lot of lineup changes and, you know, and a lot of times it hurts a band. I mean, it's just like people grab onto something and then all of a sudden, you know, it changes. And I understand that, but all throughout, you know, the time with Dead by Wednesday, the two people that have been the foundation and the original members of the band are myself and my bass player, Mike Modeste. So the rhythm section, you know, the foundation, the rhythm section has been the same since the very beginning. So that's important, you know, I feel. But yeah, Capital Conspiracy came out from just aggressive kind of attitudes towards what was happening with our world right now. And we did a lot of it remotely. We would send it to Nikki Belmore, who's the drummer of Dee Snider, and Josta, and our producer forever. He's in Connecticut. He's a great kid. He's younger than me, but he's awesome. And he basically mixed everything. And we would record the drums there with, you know, with masks on and everything, stay away from each other. And I would record the drums, but all the other stuff, they all have studios at home. So my guitar player, Dave, who played with me with David Ellison, who wrote a lot of these bangers, a lot of these, you know, these amazing riffs, which, you know, which is what you're hearing, the Here Comes the Dead and all that stuff. That one was actually written together. That's more groove based. But yeah, a lot of those riffs, I mean, he would just send to us and then Esteban, the singer, would just write a whole thing around it. And then I would have to go into the studio with the click tracks and the music, and I would record the drums proper And then we would, you know, Mike would do the bass at his house and it would all be come together. But it did. And we can't be happier, man. And here comes the Dead's Funny, because my son came up with that title. My son, 8-year-old son, Orion, came up with Here Comes the Dead. He's like, yo, you pops, he goes, you should do something called Here Comes the Dead. You're, you know, Dead by Wednesday. That'd be cool. You know, like a zombie thing. He's all into zombies. And then I'm starting to think, I'm like, well, zombies is overdone. But you know what? Let me give this to Esteban and see what he comes up with. And he came up with the whole concept about the slight on technology and how everyone is just stuck to their phone and like brainwashed and like, you know, not having, you know, eye to eye conversations and just looking down all the time. And that's pretty much what the whole song's about. Like about, you know, the technology aspect of how it's affecting and kind of ruining our culture and, you know, human race.
Yeah. I mean, my son is 16 and he gets grounded from his phone a lot.
Yeah.
But it's like, but those times when he's grounded from his phone, it's like my son is back. It's like, exactly, you know, that. And he's interacting again and he's hanging out with us again. And, you know, he's not downstairs. He's upstairs, you know, watching TV with us and stuff. But as soon as you give him that phone back, it's just like, yeah, boom, right back into it.
And it's a weird, it's a strange, like almost like a catch 22 for like you and I, because we need it to work. Yeah. And he's always getting mad at me. He gets mad at me. Well, if I can't do it, why are you doing it? I'm like, well, I have to work. I promote, I book things. I talk to people. I have to do interviews. I have to, you know, like that's how we work. And it's just, I understand it, because if you want your kid to not do something, you should not do it yourself. And that's why I quit drinking 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only did I have health issues and I turned it all around, you know, I turned it around completely, because people, a lot of times people take a pill. That's what they were trying to get me to do, to mask the problem, when you could literally stop the problem if you just listen and figure out ways to heal your body through natural ways, which not always, doesn't always help. I'm not against medicine. I have doctors in my family, but what I'm saying is that what I had, you could turn around with not dieting, but changing your diet, changing mm-hmm. your lifestyle. And so I did. And one of the things was quitting alcohol. And since then I became a better drummer, way better drummer. I lost a ton of weight. I'm a better father. And then I started thinking about it. And I'm like, our whole business is based around selling alcohol. Like I've been doing selling poison to people. And the more poison I sell, the better off I'm considered as the more people that show up to drink, I'm considered a way better musician or better band, because you had all these people there drinking and you made a lot of money for the bar. And so and you're sponsored by Jägermeister or Cold Cock or this one or that one. And I started thinking, I'm like, you know what? I'm not preaching, but after I quit, I'm like, my son's going to learn from me. So do I want to be one of those guys that come home and crack open a six pack every single day at home, and he sees that, and guess what he's going to do? That's what he's going to do. So I was like, I made a conscious decision to like, you know what? I still have to do what I do with the band, and that's going to be, you know, that's just the way it is, but I don't have to participate in it myself. And so that's what I chose to do, basically.
I can see that, man. I see a Pantera logo in the background, man. The news of the day.
The news of the two days, man.
Oh, yeah. What are you thinking about the Pantera reunion of 2023?
I'm very mixed on it, because Pantera is obviously one of my favorite bands, and Vinnie mm-hmm. Paul is like one of my influences, and I love all the music. But I think the way it depends on how they go about it, because a lot of times, as you know, in the news, especially music news and like Blabbermouth and all these other places, they tend to just kind of throw it out there and in whatever light they want people to kind of see it as. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if they call it Pantera, that's not going to be a good thing, because obviously, you know, you and I, everyone's in agreement that it's not Pantera without the Abbott brothers, just not. But that is half of the band, and that is the singer of the band still. And I think that if they go about it in like, you know, calling it like, you know, I don't know, Far Beyond Driven, a tribute to Pantera featuring Phil Anselmo and Rex Brown.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it's acceptable, man. They should be allowed to play their music, whether or not the Abbott brothers are there. But If you call it Pantera, even though they should have technically had the rights to it, it's just not. It's going to be looked at in a bad light, and it's just bad. It's just bad taste. I wouldn't do that if I were them. So let's see what they do. I mean, I think that they should be given a fair shake for sure.
Yeah, I think this thing will be. I saw Pantera 10, 15 times in the 90s. I want to see the Pantera logo on fire. I want to see the light show. You know, I want to see all of it. I want to see the whole thing going on. And, my co-host said the best thing ever. He goes, he's like, I'm not happy about this, but I'll also pay $500 to see it.
It depends. I mean, is it going to get Zach Wilde? Who are they getting?
I don't know yet.
That's what I mean. Like, it depends on who's playing too. I mean, I guess. I mean, but at the same time, it's really, really difficult to fill those shoes. And I don't think that it's something that can be done lightly without some sort of, like I said, in parentheses, almost like Pantera-ish. like Pantera-ish, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Like something different. I don't know. Not that, but something, you know, you can't call it Pantera, but you could go out and play all the Pantera songs and be together and even have, you know, in the background, you know, big pictures of both brothers, you know, playing while they're playing and screens with them on it. And all that stuff. And even show Pantera flame on flames. Cause you could, you know, as long as you don't call it that and kind of like crap on the legacy, I think that while they're playing, if they do that, it's okay. You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, speaking of getting out and playing, man, what's the future for Dead by Wednesday, and how can everybody get in touch with you guys and check out Capital Conspiracy?
Well, the new album is out now, Dead by Wednesday, Capital Conspiracy. It's literally available. I mean, I can't believe the Orchard, Von Artist, The Orchard, and Mind Snap Music and Salt of the Earth Records. It was a combined effort. Absolutely slayed it with this album. I mean, it is available everywhere. When I mean everywhere, I mean, dude, you go into like a little small mom and pop store in like Arkansas and you're going to find it. I was amazed by how available it is, and not just hard copies, but like digitally, you name it. I mean, anywhere that's streamable and downloadable, you could find Dead by Wednesday's new album, Capital Conspiracy. So I'm really psyched about the distro that we have and the team of people. I mean, we have Shauna helping with PR, Munzee with skateboard marketing, Steven Nathan with Spotify. We have Rye Video doing a video campaign. We got, you know, everyone in there under the sun, kind of like, you know, next week we have a full feature coming out in Outburn Magazine with a CD review that I heard was amazing. It just keeps going on and on. I'm going to be on a big TV show that's promoting Dead by Wednesday on CBS in September. It's called Judge Rhonda. I can't talk about what I'm doing legally on it, okay. But it's amazing. It's going to be amazing. And I don't know how I pulled that one off, but I did. And that's helping as well. We actually have a ton of dates coming up in promotion of the new album. And it starts, we have a first show with playing the second stage at the Bank of Pavilion in Guilford, New Hampshire. It's a big show. It's right next to the beer tent. And we're opening for or supporting the Pretty Reckless and Hailstorm. Oh, nice. And that's going to be a great show. So we're playing before them, next to the beer tent before they go on. And then after they're done, we play a short set. So that's going to be a great show. And that's up in New Hampshire. And then we start the Generation Dead Tour, which is a tour with Dead by Wednesday and Generation Kill, which is the singer, former Exodus singer, Rob Dukes, his new band. And it's like Dead by Wednesday. They've been around for a while, but they're actually doing more stuff now. And so both of us together are going out. We're going to play some Exodus songs together at the end of the show.
Oh, awesome.
Kind of do what we were doing with Ellison. Like we get both play. And then at the end, we kind of jam, do like an all-star thing with everyone together, playing some Exodus stuff. And some of the songs that we have a song that we wrote together called Donner's Pass on the guest vocalist album, Darkest of Angels, that was out on EMP a few years ago. It did really well. And he's on that. So we're going to probably play that song, which has never been played before. But we're doing a tour. It starts July 29th in Agawam, Massachusetts. It goes 3 weeks. through August and down to dips into the Midwest, and then it goes to Florida and then back down the East Coast all the way back to home. And then after that, we got added to a really wicked cool festival that I've never even heard of before. But somehow they, you know, we got in touch and they got a hold of us. It's called, Weekend Wasteland or Wasteland Weekend. It's okay. It's an apocalyptic, like Mad Max style Burning Man in the middle of the Mojave Desert, with fire and all, like thousands of people. And one of the, it's going to be insane. And, we're playing September 30th, after my European tour with Earth, my Sabbath tribute, which is going to happen after this Generation Dead tour. But we're going out with, for Dead by Wednesday to promote this album with Generation Kill. That tour, it ends August 14th in Albany. All the dates are on all our social media. I mean, if you go to Instagram, Spotify, you name it, you know, Facebook, all of them, Twitter, all of them. And you go to just type in Dead by Wednesday. Just make sure you spell Wednesday right, because everyone spells it wrong. it's going to come up, or just Google Dead by Wednesday. The only thing that's different is our YouTube page. Our YouTube is youtube.com/DBWTV. So our abbreviations, DBWTV. And you can get all, you know, all the videos are that are up there. So is Here Comes the Dead, and more's coming. We got more content coming. So a lot of good stuff happening. Super stoked. And we appreciate it, man. We appreciate you having me on and promoting the band. I mean, you have a lot of reach, and that's why I'm always like not breaking your balls, you know, texting, man. Let's do it. You know, I know there's way more important people than me to be interviewing, but I appreciate it.
Oh no, man, you're out there hustling, man. I love it. Well, Opus, man, good luck with the new album. Good luck with the tour, and we will talk to you soon.
Yo, thanks a lot, brother. All right,
man. Take care.
Peace out, bro.
The Talk To Me podcast, presented by KnotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.